It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to the first post-Trump Forward Nation Radio. I'm David Leventhal, and did I really just say that? In our almost 4 years of doing this show, this is the first time we will be able to do the show without a criminal and insane president. We'll have a normal president, and that might even allow us to kind of talk about normal things and policy for a change. We will begin with today's show talking about Joe Biden's inauguration, President Joe Biden's inauguration in his first few days, as we try to put our former president, the disgusting Donald Trump, his disgusting rat-infested family, cronies, co-conspirators, in the distant rearview mirror. Other than, of course, that, you know, we'll be following up on the impeachment and indictments that are coming. The bankruptcies, of course, that he's going to be declaring now to bilk his creditors. The lawsuits that are inevitably coming against him by the people he's bilking, like, you know, I don't know, Rudy Giuliani, his lawyer, who he's already talked about bilking. And with any luck, his family members, who will soon start suing him for having destroyed the Trump brand, and with any luck, impoverishing most of them. Oh, it will be really nice to be looking at that in the distant rearview mirror. Anyway, thanks for joining us. Let's get into right into today's show. FNR, Forward Nation Radio, and America have survived the Trump administration. It was looking dicey there. In fact, since we started, we've been raising the question as to whether America would survive the Trump administration. And so we will start on a further upbeat note. America has survived the Trump administration. I don't know who may have said it best. President Joe Biden, of course, very famously saying in his inauguration, "Democracy has prevailed." Let's just start, so much for the upbeat. Let's just start with the idea that a president being inaugurated in his inaugural address needs to talk about democracy having prevailed. Other than Abraham Lincoln, at least when talking about the United States, I don't think we've ever had that or anyone who could do that. As jarring as those words are, and I think it was the front page of every single newspaper the day after the inauguration, the new president has said democracy has prevailed. But the fact is, he wasn't technically right. First of all, as I've been reporting at length, the facsimile of democracy that we have in this country has, and again, I don't think prevailed is the right word. That seems like a triumph of some sort. I don't think democracy triumphed. I don't think in America the facsimile of democracy triumphed. It survived. It barely survived. We're not throwing victory parties. We're throwing survival parties at this point. But again, just to reiterate something that if you're a faithful listener of the show, you're probably getting sick of hearing, but frankly, never gets said enough. We do not have democracy in America. We have a very poor facsimile of democracy. And just quickly to talk about the survival of this facsimile in America, it is really relevant to talk about how failed democracy is under the best of circumstances here. Biden won by, what are we at right now? 7.5 million votes, something like that. And it has become clear that if he had only won by 7 million votes, depending on where those 500,000 votes were lost, he might have lost the election. That because of this relic, this insanity, this insult to decency and democracy and fairness and equality and whatever, the Electoral College. Let's remember that Biden could have won this election by about 7 million votes, as we've been arguing for a long time. We've been saying 5 million, as most experts were saying. But I think the results of this election made it clear that 4 years from now, the Democratic presidential candidate could win by 7 million votes and be held to be the loser of the election. Let's also, as we celebrate the fact that the Democrats have the barest of all bare majorities in the United States Senate, with 50-50 tie, but the Vice President Kamala Harris being able to cast a tiebreaker vote, giving the Democrats control of the chamber. Let's remember, as some commentators are pointing out, that more than 41 million more Americans have voted for those 50 Democratic senators than voted for those 50 Republican senators. More than 41 million Americans are getting by on the slimmest of majorities. And let's be clear, one of those 50 is Joe Manchin of West Virginia, which means, in many respects, they've got a very important majority, but as far as actually passing legislation, they don't have a majority for a lot of things. And this is only going to get worse. The Senate is only going to get less Democratic in the future. It is 50-50 in the Senate, and the Democrats represent 41 million more Americans. As we look at the aftermath of the effort to end democracy in America, to overthrow the government of the United States of America, perpetrated by the President of the United States and his criminal political party, orchestrating an attempted government coup of 2 weeks ago. Let's explain a little bit, just briefly, why more than half of all Republicans in the House of Representatives voted to overturn a democratic election. More than half of all Republican House members voted to overturn the election results, even after the assault on the Capitol on January 6th. More than half. We are thrilled with the fact that only, what it ended up being, 6, 7, 8 Republican senators did. Well, why was it so much worse in the House, as I've been talking again endlessly on this show? Because of gerrymandering. Because there is nothing approaching democracy in the United States House of Representatives, despite the fact that people continue to pay lip service to the idea that there is. Democrats have a small majority in the House of Representatives, but again, that is indicative of an absolute landslide, which is what they need in order to maintain control of Congress, because of the gerrymandering, because of the drawing of congressional districts that take away democracy from most American voters when it comes to House races. That is why, because of that gerrymandering, that is why Republicans in Congress are more concerned with getting voted out of office by losing in a primary than losing in a general election. As a result, they constantly have to guard their right flank, and they are most especially afraid of the absolute fucking lunatics that currently comprise the Republican voter. So because of gerrymandering and how we basically have so few actual general elections in the House of Representatives, that's why the GOP is as crazy as it is in the House of Representatives and slightly less crazy in the United States Senate. All of these things mean one of democracy. But of course, those are all institutional impediments to democracy, all of which need to be changed, you've heard me talk about at length. But let's not forget, when we talk about our democracy, that before the ink was dry on the failed insurrection, I know that's mixing my metaphor somehow, but before the powder was dry, before the smell had left the air of the gunpowder from the failed insurrection, Republicans were already out suppressing the 2022 vote and votes thereafter. The lesson from this vote for Republicans will be, it's much harder to steal an election after people vote than to steal the election before people vote. Among the wonderful pieces of news, Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, who's being canonized in America for having stood up to a blatant theft of an American election, is out trying to suppress votes in Georgia for 2022 and beyond. The heralded, one of the members of the Michigan Board of Elections, Von Langensveld, I think was his name, has been drummed out of the Board of Elections by the Republican Party because he voted to certify the election and possibly was one of the people who possibly saved democracy, or again, the semblance of it in America, prevented a civil war in America. Because of his efforts to certify a legitimate election and not to destroy democracy or its semblance in America, he's being drummed out of the Republican Party. And we continue, and we will be reminded of those failings of democracy as we go forward, and President Biden and the governing Democratic Party find it so hard to actually enact a pro-American agenda for this country. Nevertheless, I guess democracy has prevailed. We're not yet dead. And for that, I guess, thank you, Trump supporters, for not utterly destroying this country quite yet. You're still building up to it, I know. But speaking of the inauguration, one of the shocking things for me is the number of people I know who actually watched the inauguration. This has been just notable. Basically, everybody I know watched the inauguration. I'm not sure I know anybody who's watched inaugurations before. No, one of my friends said he's watched inaugurations before. But just remarkable what television this was. Now, I understand that part of it is, I guess if it bleeds, it leads. It people like we look at a car accident. We were watching to see if Washington was going to erupt in flames or if they were going to cut into the inauguration by showing state capitals across America being set ablaze by Trump supporters. So there was a certain element of action movie that isn't usually present in a presidential inauguration that probably got a lot of people watching, but I don't think that's why most of the people I know are watching the inauguration. We really wanted to be sure. We wanted to see it happen. We wanted to start putting the son of a bitch into our rearview mirrors. For many of us, I'm reminded, basically, we were seeing our adrenaline levels drop over the last few days for the first time in 4 years. I'm thinking about my state, the state of people around me, and watching the inauguration and just needing that sense of relief that the son of a bitch is gone and America may have survived. He didn't actually create the nuclear war that will destroy the world, and much of what he did will just be unwound if we can just avoid getting worse in the future. I feel like the movie Crank. I don't know how many people saw that, but it's just the premise of the movie Crank is this guy, the hero gets poisoned, and the only way he doesn't die is if his adrenaline level is kept up to like massive levels. So he's spending the movie injecting himself with drugs, having sex, doing whatever he needs to do to keep his adrenaline level really high. That's the only way he could stave off death. So in other words, it's a thought-provoking love story. But this is what I'm thinking. If the hero of that movie had gotten poisoned on January 20th of 2017, he wouldn't have needed any of that stuff to stay alive. The Trump presidency would have kept his adrenaline up to safe levels for 4 effing years. And the first thing that I'm feeling and so many of us are feeling is just relief that at least for now, it's over. More an interregnum. But the insanity is gone, is reduced, at least for a little while. So Biden comes in, and we can all take a deep breath because he brings reality to the White House. Yes, brings reality back to at least one aspect of the United States government. The fact that Biden has had to come out and promise that he will tell the American public the truth, as opposed to the 30,000 something lies from the scumbag who left. But the president comes in and says, I'm going to tell you the truth, even when it's unfortunate. And then goes about proving it by telling Americans we're going to exceed 600,000 COVID deaths by the time we're done. We're over 400,000 now. In contrast to the prior president, who's still telling us that COVID is manufactured by the liberal media and probably George Soros. Just the idea of bringing reality back to the White House. He's bringing basic human decency back to the White House, which is why we were watching, why we were on the edge of our seats, why we needed this. Basic human decency, something that was so obviously and utterly lacking from the former president and everybody in his orbit, including his disgustingly sleazy piece of shit family. To show us, as a last minute statement for reminding us he had no human decency, of course, is Trump's pardons. Pardons the last minute. We're all a little bit shocked that he didn't pardon himself and his whole family proactively, prospectively. But the people he did pardon is like a rogues gallery of total sleaze, scum, garbage. Starting with Steve Bannon, famous white supremacist, a guy who was charged federally with a grift regarding the border wall, stealing money from people under false pretenses of building a border wall, stealing from Trump-supporting fucking morons, in other words. You can see why Trump would pardon him. Trump's all about the grift, especially of the morons who vote for him and support him. But Steve Bannon gets a pardon, but he's just the tip of the iceberg. Basically, we're reminded that Donald Trump promised to drain the swamp, and I've had a couple of opportunities to say this, but here at the last minute, he leaves us with the idea that his idea of draining the swamp is letting them all go free, letting them all out of prison, ending their sentences, ending payments that they owe for fraud that they committed against the United States government. You don't have to pay the money back. Just outright sleaze. In other words, Donald Trump's ilk, his milieu. What I heard was his last, I'm not sure this is true, but his last act and his last pardon was of Jeanine Pirro's husband. Jeanine Pirro, a syphilitic, rabid piece of shit on Fox News, who is a Trump-supporting liar, has gone to the mat for him. Well, she was rewarded for being a piece of human shit. Her husband gets a pardon. Another piece of human shit gets a pardon for the president. That's his parting act. His pardons were so pathetic that we're having a debate about presidential pardon powers right now. But here I am. This is, I guess, putting Trump in the rearview mirror. I guess I'm not quite ready to do that. It's coming. But we're actually talking about presidential pardon powers. We've almost never had to do this before. We're talking about the fact that a president can, in fact, be criminally investigated and charged for obstruction of justice in his pardons. The pardon power seems to be basically absolute, but not absolute if you are using it to obstruct justice. In other words, if you are pardoning your co-conspirators, like, I don't know, can I come up with a like George H.W. Bush, the better Bush, pardoning Caspar Weinberger and other people who were involved in Iran-Contra before they could testify to the fact that the current president was involved in Iran-Contra, even though he testified under oath to not doing that, to not knowing about it. Anyway, so we're talking about getting beyond the pardon power to investigate the president for obstruction of justice and corruption. And I understand there are people out there talking about, well, Bill Clinton pardoned Mark Rich, a wealthy financier and donor. And you know what? That was awful. And everybody thought it was awful. Democrats thought it was awful. But it's still one fucking guy. As awful as it was, Trump says, okay, I'll see your one corrupt and I'll raise you 35. I'll sell pardons to whoever can pay enough money for them. Because, boy, Trump's going to need a lot of money. I, I'm reminded that, again, as I put it a few weeks ago, America has gotten a stay of execution. We've gotten a decent man as president of the United States, a man who actually respects the Constitution, respects the people of America. We've got a Senate that is nominally run by the party that's not a bunch of criminals. Same thing with the House of Representatives. But we're still on death row. And Trump may be gone, and he may be gone. We may not see him back again, whether or not he's impeached and then prevented from running for office again. They're already turning on him a little bit. But the Republican base is not gone, and it is not going anywhere. And the white supremacists, which is such a large part of the Republican base, don't say deplorable, they're not going, not only are they not going anywhere, but there's no question they are emboldened. People are asking this question, you know, is January 6th going to be a turning point? Is this going to be the last gasp and we're going to get some sanity now? Or is this kind of the opening salvo? I don't think there's any question it's the opening salvo for the ultra-right nationalists, terrorists, etc. They're not going anyplace. They're just going to get stronger, especially now that we have a human being as president of the United States. The Republican criminal organization itself is not suddenly changing. The Republican Party is not going to get sanity. Again, right after this happened, the House of Representatives went in, the Republicans voted overwhelmingly to disqualify an election. They're not going anywhere. And they're not going anywhere in large part. I was going to say because their voters are shit. But of course, they're shit too. The people who are shit have started infiltrating the actual halls of Congress. But here are some numbers. 19% of Republicans believe Biden won the election. The evidence to the contrary is zero. There's nothing, zero. Zero, zero, zero. There is nothing there arguing to the contrary except for a few lying sacks of human shit. And 81% of Republicans either believe that Trump won or haven't yet made up their minds about it. Fewer than one in five Republican voters believe that Biden won an election, that he won easily. 45% of Republicans, I just heard in a recent poll, 45% of Republicans approve of the actions of January 6th, the assault on the United States government. These people are not going anywhere in part because our democracy, our pseudo-democracy, favors these fucking morons. All these things that I argued before mean we don't have a democracy. Every single one of them favors the criminal organization and the fucking morons and insurrectionists who support it. And it's inconceivable at this point that any of that is going to change, that we're doing anything about the Electoral College, gerrymandering, or the unfairness of the United States Senate. Remember this. Remember the criminal organization when Biden talks unity and people talk unity. And the Republicans come out, as they've already started doing, and saying, he talks unity, but he's not uniting. Remember that. Remember, we're talking, everybody's talking about how uplifting it was that many people in the Republican Party showed up for Biden's inauguration. This is how we have moved the Overton window or lowered the bar for a Republican criminal organization. Some of them showed up for the inauguration of the next president of the United States. Again, I'm sure you've heard this. The president didn't show up for the inauguration for the first time since Andrew Johnson didn't show up for the inauguration of his successor. And that was in the 1860s. Okay, just to give you an idea. So we're hearing it's nice that the GOP are at the inauguration. I'm listening to podcasts talking about, well, it was good that the living Republican former president was there. That's George W. Bush was at the inauguration. And as I look at George W. Bush at the inauguration, I'm thinking, he's sitting there thinking, I could have told this guy how to steal an election. I mean, why didn't he come talk to me about how to steal an election? Stole an election. I'm a more competent Republican. I successfully stole an election. George W. Bush was there. Yeah, that passes as bipartisanship, the guy who stole the presidential election. Kevin McCarthy, of course, was there. We hear, oh, it's nice that the minority leader of the House was there. Yes, he was there just a few days after rallying his troops to vote to overturn a Democratic election. How uplifting. How uplifting that he was there. Ted Cruz was there. Ted Cruz voting, trying to get rid of an election, trying to overthrow the government of the United States, an election, was there. Isn't that inspiring? Isn't that uplifting? Cruz, I can only think, was there scouting for weak spots in the defense for the next attack. But okay, let's be upbeat. I said a while ago I was going to be a little bit upbeat today's show. We do have a new president, and there's a lot to be upbeat about. There's a lot that Biden talked about and did that's positive, that gives us reason to hope, or maybe more reason than we deserve anyway. Best of all, I want to start the best thing with Biden so far. I was just talking about unity. I've been saying for a long time, it troubles me that Biden keeps talking about unity, except my hope is, of course, that he has to talk about unity. That's what people who vote Democratic want to hear, who might vote for them want to hear. But he better not actually walk the walk, so to speak. Well, so far, his actions regarding unity, I think, have been very uplifting. And fall to a large extent in the category of, yes, I want to unify America to do things my way. Like Republicans have always looked at unity for a long time. We want to work together for you to agree to do everything we want. And there's been a little bit of that, I think, with Biden. Showing that maybe the only thing that he understands and his advisors understand, that the thing that he really has to worry about, the thing he really has to care about, is not what Republicans think. They're criminal scumbags who will never work with a Democratic president with any kind of integrity or decency. The only thing he needs to unify is Joe Manchin and maybe John Tester in Montana. But the most rightest of all Democrats, Joe Manchin, who has already come out and assured Fox News and its piece of shit viewers that he would never vote to get rid of the filibuster. Boom. There goes the Democrats' ability to do most of their agenda. Oh, I know. We can count on Republicans switching side. Yeah. Okay. We'll see this one play out. But if you think that that's going to happen, I got a bridge to sell you somewhere. He also assured viewers of Fox News that he wouldn't support any kind of court packing scheme. Let's hope he's using careful language and anything that we can do to try to make our courts more representative of the American voters, he won't stand in the way of. But there's a lot he's going to stand in the way of. Positive on unity, let's hope that what Biden and the Democrats mean by unity for the next few years, we just had an agreement to delay Trump's impeachment trial until February 9th. And I think that's actually good news from what I've heard so far. It does put it off a little bit. So Biden gets to, and the media gets to focus on Biden's early agenda. It will, while people are still paying attention to this, he'll have a chance to reach some voters and try to get some grassroots support for positive things that he wants to do. It's also good because the case grows stronger and stronger for the impeachment. Every day we get more information, we get more videos. The investigations are proceeding about how bad this insurrection was and how strong Donald Trump's role was in supporting it. And so the case just gets stronger and stronger. So give it another week and a half, another couple of weeks, I guess. And it figures to be stronger. And in the meantime, it's in the background while Biden's agenda moves forward. Just on the case getting stronger front, the New York Times has just reported, just before I went to record this show, that apparently we now know that Trump conspired the Department of Justice attorney to oust the acting attorney general regarding the Georgia vote and trying to overturn the vote in Georgia. So as more of this information comes out here, trying to oust an acting AG in order to overthrow an election because he was following the law, it's going to be easier for Trump to be convicted in his impeachment trial, and it will be another way to keep the absolute lawlessness of the Republican criminal organization in front of the American public. So let's go to Biden's first days. He's issued about 30 executive orders, and that was as of a few hours ago, so we're probably way ahead of that. His executive orders, I'm happy to report, have basically been about erasing Trump to the extent that he possibly can. And the good news here is, how much of Donald Trump's legacy will be so easily erased? We are reminded that Donald Trump was a president for show. He was a reality TV president. He wasn't about governance. He was about show. And this was reflected in how, when he did something, how he did it. There was no effort, of course, to reach out to the other side. There was no effort to reach consensus. There was no effort to bring the Congress and the American people along with what he wanted. So he just signed executive order after executive order. And that was all stuff that is the most easily unwound. Now, Republicans did get smart on a lot of things and added riders to congressional bills that will be harder to repeal, especially with Joe Manchin maybe casting the tie-breaking vote. But the fact that Trump was all about show has made it easier for Biden to go in and basically just try to wipe his legacy out entirely. Yeah, the tax cuts and the judges, maybe the two of the worst things that Trump did will still be there. But a lot of the stuff will be dealt back pretty quickly. Starting, of course, with the deadly pandemic that's killed more than 400,000 on its way substantially upward every day, still setting new records for the number of people who are dying. Joe Biden has come out and worked for a national mask mandate. He couldn't do it. He can't actually order a mask mandate, presidential order that would probably be illegal, according to people I've read about this. Whether we could do this by law, by a bill of Congress requiring a mask mandate, is an open legal question that will remain an open legal question, because it ain't going to happen with Republicans in Congress. We're not going to get a law. So, and we're reminded of the GOP basically cramping the Commerce Clause in the Affordable Care Act decision that will make the federal government enforcing its power much less likely to survive constitutional scrutiny than it would have in the past. But that's for a prior and maybe future show. So Biden did what he could. He ordered covering up of federal property on transportation. He's created a masking challenge to try to inspire voters. He's actually showing up wearing a mask to try to be a leader for people who will do this. Now, of course, this will work for a bunch of Americans who probably were already inclined to wear a mask. And of course, will not work for Trump voters. And if anything, will make Trump voters double down on not wearing a mask, because that's just the kind of assholes they are. If Joe Biden wants it, gosh darn it, I'm against it. Said Joe Biden should make a show of respecting the United States flag, and then we'll have the GOP just burst in flames as Trump supporters start burning American flags just to show Biden. Anyway, why would he try to get mask use and lead us to mask use? A study just published in the journal Nature estimated that universal mask use, which is defined as 95% of people wearing masks, could prevent nearly 130,000 deaths in the current months, in the coming months. Nearly 130,000 deaths. This is just one study, but you know, maybe it's off by a whole lot. It's only 100,000 deaths. I just want to be clear on, again, when we talk about Trump supporters, these are people who are fighting for their liberty not to wear a mask and to murder 130,000 of their fellow citizens. Just to be clear again what we're dealing with. Biden is back in the WHO. That might, you know, do something about coronavirus. He's reached out to the WHO, the World Health Organization, and said, hey, we want to be on board again. Other executive orders, you heard about all these, but they're all positive. And as I read through some of this litany, spend a couple minutes thinking about how awful these socialists are and how bad you think this is. He's made great strides, will be making great strides with immigrants and Trump's travel ban against people from Muslim countries. DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, the Dreamers in America, we've been reporting on since the very beginning of the show how Donald Trump has been working to get these people out of America. Biden's going to protect them. Trump's census plan to not count immigrants in the census, Biden's executive order gotten rid of that. We will be slowing down the pace of deportations and making sure that people who are being deported deserve to be deported, and people who don't deserve to be deported will actually have a chance to stay in America, like if their lives are at risk. The whole wall thing, like stopping building this bullshit, also executive order, also sends a message to the rest of the world that America is civilized again. And basically, this is all a thumb in the eye of the racist white supremacist, you know, Trump supporters. Biden executive order, we're back in the Paris Accord. Again, America willing to rejoin the civilized world if the civilized world will have us. Paris Accord wasn't the only step he made on the environment and climate change. He has, by executive order, rescinded the permit for the Keystone XL oil pipeline. My wife asked me the other day, what's the Keystone oil pipeline? Keystone oil pipeline, for those who don't know, it is to take oil from the tar sands of Canada all the way down the United States to the Gulf of Mexico. It was described by NASA, former NASA lead climate scientist and someone who actually knows what he's talking about with global warming, James Hansen, as essentially game over for the planet. I've talked about this on the show before, but essentially game over for the planet. Joe Biden is unwinding essentially game over for the planet. Wow, that's socialist. The Arctic National Wildlife Refuge will be protected again. Vehicle emissions. Can't say cars anymore because we don't sell cars in America anymore. We just sell SUVs and pickup trucks. Well, even those polluting pieces of shit are going to need to be a little bit cleaner. Maybe the idea of preserving the planet, not such a bad idea. Trump has been assaulting the environment and science since he started. He's upped that in the last few weeks. Biden's rolling that back already. Regarding the economy, reaching out to help people who are suffering. We'll talk about his $1.9 trillion recovery plan in a moment. Student loan payments, continuing to suspend those. Suspending evictions. Suspending interest on student loans. Keeping people in their houses. On the second day, aid to families and worker safety. Aid to people who might want to call in sick. Pushing for a $15 minimum wage, requiring it in federal government contracts. Efforts to reduce racism and bigotry. Executive orders to reduce racism and bigotry. Oh, that's so awful. Gosh, and we're getting back to the glory days of the Civil War. And government ethics, of course. Freezing last-minute Trump orders to make government, like himself, completely unaccountable. People in the United States government will actually be accountable for ethics laws again because of Biden executive orders. You know, draining the swamp. Quickly, before we go, a quick update on his $1.9 trillion recovery plan, which he's gone to work on. How he's going to get that through, whether that's reconciliation, they're still working out all the details there. We're going to have lots of time to report on this. The good news is Biden has just come out and said how he's going to pay for the $1.9 trillion recovery plan. I understand he's going to pay for it by unwinding the gains made from insider trading by Republican senators related to COVID. Yeah, senators, former senators like Loeffler and Perdue, those GOP senators who got briefed about COVID and then went ahead and sold and bought stocks, insider trading. I'm making this one up actually, but maybe he's going to unwind those gains from insider trading. Otherwise, hopefully he's going to find a way to tax rich people or, for now, put it on the credit card. He's proposing $1,400 additional stimulus checks for those who could do the math. Democrats want to 2,000, Republicans limited it to 600. 1,400 plus 600 gets you to the 2,000. The unemployment insurance increase to $400 per week for those who lost their jobs because of COVID. $20 billion in a national vaccination program. $20 billion for a national vaccination program. I don't know why you'd waste money on that. Isn't the vaccination just going swimmingly in America right now? I'll get into that in a future show. I don't have time for how crappy this has been. Great job. Could you imagine if this had happened under Biden or Obama that we had screwed this up so badly? But anyway, Biden's going to make an effort to actually get people vaccinated. He's sworn to do, 100 million in 3 months or something. I forget what the number was. $170 billion for schools and student financial relief. I've talked about this before. I mentioned this one before, but it's coming into a little more relief here as what we know. Someone who works at a public college, I could tell you that this is just a drop in the bucket. Our educational system needs an incredible amount of money. And the idea that this is what it takes to try to get money to public schools, which are just being absolutely devastated, is pathetic. Aid to small businesses. Even some small businesses that don't contribute to Trump. Actual small businesses. Aid to poor people. Aid to Native Americans who keep being screwed by COVID and everything else in America. Extending to 14 weeks paid sick and medical leave care. Like, this is a thing that we have to do. Extending to 14 weeks paid sick and medical leave. We're reminded that America is the only advanced industrialized nation that does not have guaranteed paid sick leave. And of course, we don't have guaranteed health care. We're the only one on that one as well. But imagine during a deadly global pandemic that the president of the United States now thinks that letting sick people stay home might be a good idea. It's remarkable as you go through the litany of things that he's doing. You just, no matter who you are, unless you attach a bad label to it, you just have to look at this and go, who could be against this? Increasing the child tax credit? A belated effort, as is being described, including by Biden, to address child poverty. America's child poverty rate just blows away the entire rest of the industrialized world. A recent study says that Biden's plan to increase the child tax credit would reduce child poverty by 45%. Just for those of you out there who think children in poverty doesn't look good in the brochures or something, is not a great thing for America. Some 12 million children in America right now live in households that lack enough food. 12 million children in America. If you can't freaking agree on how we treat our children, what the hell are we trying to save in this piece of shit of a country? He's asking Congress for $415 billion related to COVID to scale up testing, vaccination, genomic surveillance in order to trace where people have been, to track down flare-ups in the epidemic, increase domestic manufacturing, and create a national corps of public health workers. Wow, national corps. That sounds like socialism to me. Republicans better start using nasty words, because pretty soon the average American might think that some of this shit actually makes sense. Oh, and the last thing that Biden proposes doing is putting competent people in charge of the United States government to actually administer these programs. You know, socialists. Anyway, more on Biden and his agenda and how the world's going to work and how America's going to survive on future shows, where we hope, for the first time in a long time at Forward Nation Radio, to actually start talking about substantive issues and not outright bullshit. Till then, be safe. We'll see you soon. Happy new president, everybody.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.